You're listening to PodcastJuice.net.
Did you know that Podcast Juice is premium content? Well, check out Podcast Juice All Access. Join today and get instant access to over 9 years of great classic podcasts, members-only shows, and more exclusive content. Go to PodcastJuice.net/All Access and join today.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to PodcastJuice.net. And you are listening to The Wrestling Rundown. I am your co-host, At Pooh, a.k.a. Anthony L. Kennedy the First. And yes, Big Sexy, that would have been my wrestling ring name. It has a nice ring to it.
Anthony L. Kennedy the First.
The First, sir. My daddy named me that, so I'm going to call myself that.
Is that right?
And I am joined by Big Sexy and Sack Mark Wiggins. How's it going, homie?
It is going well. Greetings and salutations to all fans of the sweet science of the squared circle. I just made that up too.
Yeah, I'm sure some boxing fans. I know. No, you didn't, homeboy. Maybe let's call it the technical art.
The technical art. There we go.
Well, you know, we had a nice little script with rundown of each segment that we were going to just discuss and just get into the week that was in pro wrestling. But then, breaking news, niggas, breaking news. Fucking CM Punk. Now, I've gone on record and stated that I am not the biggest CM Punk fan, and damn it, he did it to me again.
And why aren't you the biggest CM Punk fan?
I just kind of got over his whole shtick. Like, Oh, I'm the new Austin. I'm going against the machine. I'm the voice to the voiceless. Damn it, I saw this shtick in 1996 when it was called Shane Douglas the Franchise. You didn't invent it and whatever. And I just kind of got tired of his promos. But last night, he decided to not only stick it to me and Vince and Triple H and Steph and the WWE, but the world at large. He has signed with the UFC, Ultimate Fighting Championships. I did not see that coming. I am perplexed and astounded, but I actually think this is great. Big Sexy, CM Punk in the UFC. Do we see him in a fight next year?
You know, I hope so, but when I read the release, it says they're not going to just throw him out there like they did with Brock. They're going to bring him along slowly and, make him train like anybody else. But, you know, two things work against him is, one, he's 36. And going into that type of intense training in such a, intense combat sport at such a later age, odds are against him. I'm not saying he can't do it, because anybody can do it. It's Punk. But he's got an uphill battle ahead of him. And if he gets through the training okay and his first fight will sell a lot of seats, I'll tell you that.
It will sell a lot of seats and a lot of buys.
A lot of buys.
Now, to make this interesting, even further more interesting, the MMA fan base on the message boards, even on Dana White's own Facebook page, they're not happy. They're saying, who the hell is CM Punk? He has no experience. He's never done combat fighting of any type. And he's taken a spot from another 0-0 fighter. Me personally, it's like, look, dude, it is what it is. Brock Lesnar came into the UFC. I understand he was an NCAA champion wrestler. He competed. He has the credentials. But you guys hated on him. He came in, he dominated. And most importantly, he brought an interest from the mainstream fans that's not there currently. I'm sorry, UFC fighting, I put it ahead of boxing, but the point right now is the mass audience does not care as much as they did. Brock Lesnar, they care. CM Punk, got to give the devil his due. They will care.
And he's not the first one to transition. And all wrestlers who have done this have not gone immediately to the organization. Bobby Lashley is doing it. I think his record is 12-2 as a MMA fighter, but he's not in UFC. And Batista did it one time and won his one match. So people need to get off that, man, because it's easy to armchair quarterback from the safety of your couch on Facebook. Well, he can't do it. He's never done it. You know, if you think you can do it, get your ass in the ring. It's that simple. Get in the octagon. I can't do it. So I'm not going to hate on somebody who wants to try it. If he tries it and he does well, great. If he tries it and he doesn't make it, hey, he fucking tried it, man. People need to get off that.
And it shows a total lack of understanding business.
Clearly.
I'm like, that's why we have a Kay Velasquez, a John Jones, a George St. Pierre, John Hendricks. But guess what? People don't care about them as much as they cared about Brock Lesnar, Quentin Rampage Jackson, and Anderson Silva. Well, and it's debatable that they care that much for Anderson Silva. People recognize he was a great fighter, but could he draw? I would say not until Chael Sonnen, which is another all hype, no substance. I think that's the phrase.
Yeah.
combated out there, although he almost did beat Anderson Silva. And it's like CM Punk, I think he has it in him that he's going to try to really learn this craft and be able to not only just get into the octagon and be competitive, but win. Can he do it, though? That's the big question.
You know what? We don't know. Because his wrestling style is based on a lot of that type of style. A lot of type of the striking and submission. So I don't know. Now, I don't know if he can develop the quickness that he's going to need to get in there with these guys at that weight class. But we're going to find out. And the thing is, if it doesn't work out for him, it just makes him more marketable if he ever goes back into pro wrestling.
Now, the thing is they're saying that he's projecting middleweight and welterweight. They're saying his walk-around weight is 200. He's going to try a test cut, which, to me, I'm totally against cutting weight. I just think over time, that's just not good for your body. But, you know, hey, it is what it is. But unfortunately, the way the industry works is, and I'm sure, and I'm just going to educate some of y'all if you're not unaware of what weight cutting is. Weight cutting is the practice of you try to cut as much weight that your body physically can handle by dehydrating yourself, by starving yourself of food and fluids, and sweating out as much water weight as possible so that you can, when you go to get your weigh in, which I believe it still happens the day before your fight, you can then fluid back up and be in a good enough fighting condition to perform well, and at that same time be at a weight that gives you a competitive advantage. For example, let's say Anderson Silva. Anderson Silva's walk around weight, people have suggested, is around 215. He cuts to 185. Now, if he can cut without losing any muscle or fat and still have that weight, if he cuts all water weight, he's going into the ring theoretically with a 15 to 20 pound advantage, which can be the difference in being victory and defeat. So you have CM Punk, who walks around at 200, trying to cut to 185. Well, somebody's walking around at 210, 215 into that cage, so it might not be the best thing for him.
Well, it's like, you know, it's like the boxers have been doing that for years. You know, the day of the weigh-in, you know, they'll come in right at that limit of the, class they're going to be in, and the night of the fight, they're, you know, 250 or whatever the fuck they want to weigh. So I can see that, but see, Punk, if he does that and tries to, you know, cut weight and then go in with guys who cut weight to 185 as well, but they come in at 215 and he's at 200, he may have them in cardio, but he's never been a power guy. So I don't think that's a good move for him.
Now, the thing is, I've seen him give that GTA to some big guys, but, you know, of course, there is that help.
They're helping him out a lot.
Because I've seen him, I think the heaviest person I've seen him give the GTA to was Kane, who's probably 350, I want to say.
Yeah, but Kane did all the work.
Yeah, Kane did some help. I mean, you got to give him props. He got him up over his shoulders, and he probably is helping a little bit in the movement. But then again, Kane is helping out on that move. So I'm just saying we can't discount his power. Now, the other thing that is kind of interesting is, and I don't know if you're aware of this, Big Sexy, but Brock Lesnar's contract is up at the end of WrestleMania. Oh. There's already been talk that he's healthy. They're saying that diverticulitis, has been affecting him for the majority of his adult life. So he hasn't gone into a UFC fight healthy. They're saying that since he retired in, I believe it was 2011, after a really bad beating to Alistair Overeem, that he's been the healthiest he's ever been. I believe he's 37. I can look that up, but I believe he's 37. And they're saying that he's thinking, you know what? The WWE, he has his light schedule, but he's wrestling more than he would be doing a camp and two matches per year, and that there's so much more money he can make, not only from sponsorships, but the UFC points on the pay-per-views, which he's not going to get from the WWE, thanks to the WWE Network, that Brock Lesnar might be thinking about coming back to the UFC, which I put out the idea, Punk Lesnar. People are saying it's too much of a weight difference.
It is. It is. That would never happen.
But would you pay for that match?
Oh, I'd pay for it. But there is no way that will happen. That's just, you know, a minimum of 100 pounds. Come on, man.
I think Brock maybe probably walk around at 260.
Okay, fine. We'll give you 260. And no way he's going to cut down to like 240.
He ain't cutting, period. He don't have to. I don't
exactly.
So, yeah, that was just one of the discussions out there. There was a floating rumor that somebody put up. There was a screenshot of a journalist that was there in Vegas last night that said that they had talked to CM Punk and that he stated that they offered him a match during the month of WrestleMania, a main event match during the month of WrestleMania, and that sealed the deal, which to me, I laughed my ass off when I heard it because I'm just thinking, good Lord, if UFC really puts a pay-per-view opposite WrestleMania in the same month and he outdraws that, does a million buys for his first UFC match in UFC, I'm just like, wow, that's the ultimate fuck you to Vince, Triple H, and Hunter.
Let's think, Triple H and Hunter?
I'm sorry, Triple H and
Let's think about this for a moment. You know, what's the average UFC buy rate? Do you know?
Average now is about, let's say, yeah, the average now is about 250 to 300. I could be wrong with that, but the average 250 to 300. Like a big match, let's say a John Jones match, that might get you to 600.
If they put Jones on the card and have Punk on the undercard with this, they could probably get to 7.5. Maybe more. I don't know. Depends on the price point. And a lot of that's going to come from the WrestleMania money because either their subscription rates is going to just peak, or people aren't going to be paying $50 to see it on a pay-per-view basis. That's not going to happen.
But the thing is, but here's the best part. They don't have to because it's only $9.99.
Oh, shit.
That's right. So they don't have to. It's like, yo, they can do both. But it's just it'll just be the embarrassment that you didn't go hard with pushing this dude as a main event draw. And here he is, runs to the UFC, and bam, he does a million buys out the gate. Which some people talk that it might be CM Punk versus George St. Pierre and George St. Pierre's return match to the UFC. That could do a million plus buys.
Yeah, but GSP will whip his ass. He ain't ready for that.
Well, GSP is kind of older too, but again, he's had decades.
Exactly.
Of combat.
Exactly. Competition. And this is not wrestling. GSP is not coming there to be the job guy for Punk. That ain't gonna happen.
Oh, another. I saw this on Twitter as well. Another thing that I saw was, it's like, wow. It's like, well, at least this time Punk is going to be a part timer that comes in and puts the full timer over. Of course, he has no choice in the matter. One thing I tweeted out, I was like, seriously, CM Punk married a WWE diva. He walked out on the WWE after one of their big pay-per-view shows, and he signed to the UFC to fight. It's so obvious CM Punk wants Brock Lesnar's life.
Well, he's got a, you know, I'm not going to say it. I'm not going to say it. I don't want Brock looking for me. I don't know if he wants his life because, you know, Brock went ahead and followed a dream of his and tried out for the Vikings. You know, and I don't see Punk doing that.
I think that was bullshit. That was just a way to get out of his contract so he can get to mixed martial arts. He was just tired of the WWE grind. That's what I really believe.
You know, I can see that to an extent.
And the last one, there was another one. Mad at WWE for not allowing him to put sponsors on MMA shorts, signs UFC. They sign an exclusive contract with Reebok. I'm just like, It's just so funny. It was like, he was finally, it's like, he's finally in the UFC. He was going to get sponsorships, all the shorts. And it's like, yeah, UFC just signed an exclusivity deal with Reebok. So you're not even going to get that, sir. Sucks to be you.
I know. But he's got a valid beef, though. You know, when he came back and, you know, Lesnar comes in and has his little, you know, JJ, whatever Jimmy that John's thing, Jimmy John's shirt on. I'm like, wait a minute. Punk can't do this? But then again, I see the rationale, because if they do it, where do you draw a line?
And the other part of that is that WWE has their own sponsors and endorsements, so you don't want to piss that off. So,
and it's like in baseball. I don't like it now in baseball. If you look at a lot of the bigger stadiums, you see all these, you know, the signage on the outfield wall. I hate that. You know, it looks like a minor league ballpark now, and I don't like that. So I'm okay with that. I'm okay with them saying no to that.
Oh, what also makes it worse is the fact that they actually digitally put up ads.
Oh, I hate that.
Yeah.
So, oh, I hate that.
Like the NBA don't have them there, you know, doing the scoreboards where the announcers are at. And then on the MLB, they'll have digital ads there.
Jeez.
So that's CM Punk moving on to the UFC. We'll have more CM Punk talk later. But right now, we have some other news that occurred this week. New Japan decided to announce their version of the WWE Network with New Japan Pro Wrestling World. Believe it or not, it's 999 yen, which I got a chuckle out of that. For those of you in the U.S., that comes to $8.40. So, yay, U.S. dollar. We're killing the yen. You get, right now they have about 200 hours of footage up there, as well as you're going to get all of their big shows, starting with the Wrestle Kingdom 9 on January 4th. And moving forward, they'll have two pay-per-views a month that you will get for the 999 yen. But even beyond that, you have all this tons of matches and footage that dates back to the formation of New Japan Pro Wrestling in 1972. We're talking Antonio Inoki. We're talking mixed martial arts. Well, at the time, they were called mixed martial arts match. They were still work with William Ruska and other combat sports fighters that they brought in. You have the 80s boom period with Tiger Mask versus Dynamite Kid, the ascension of Tatsumi Fujinami, Riki Choshu and his crew. Then the shoot style offshoot that left and came back with Akira Maeda, which really elevated the work weight that was going on in New Japan. And then, of course, the three musketeers of Kiji Mutu, Shinya Hashimoto and Masa Chono, and their epic 90s run. And of course, the last 3 years of New Japan television, as well as their big shows. Big Sexy, are you signing up for this?
You know, I'm going to have to at least sign up for at least a month just to take a look, because if their content, and the thing is, I kind of want an English translated version, but I know Google will translate it for you.
Right, right.
But if there's a way to easily navigate it, I want to see all the Dynamite Kid stuff. I want to see the Bret Hart stuff, because he was there with Dynamite on some of these tours. I want to see the early Bulldogs. I want to see Stan Hansen. I want to see a lot of this stuff. I want to see tons of it. I want to see... Wait. And just so I'm clear, New Japan, that was Baba, right?
No. That was Inoki.
Baba
is All Japan.
All Japan. You know, a lot of people still came through New Japan, and in the later years, they did a lot of stuff with WCW. A lot of talent was exchanged. And even back in the WWF days, you know, Bob Backlund would go over there, and oh yeah, and Fujinami. I first saw Fujinami on a WWF show back in the day when he was their junior heavyweight champion. So yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing this. I mean, and again, Dynamite Kid alone is worth it.
I'll go ahead and give you that one. He definitely was an innovator and a pioneer to the junior heavyweight work rate. But for me, the one thing I really want to see is that period from 83 to 89, where there was that transition of from Inoki being the great main eventer and cultural hero, and he can beat any and all martial arts practitioners, to we're going to do wrestling. We're talking about Riki Choshu and his crew that and the Lariat and all of that. We had Hulk Hogan coming in, and you know, he went in the first IWGP tournament, not title, tournament, And then we had Dick Murdoch and Bruiser Brody, who jumped from All Japan because they paid him a ton of money. And it's just amazing, just the amount of content that there is there, the amount of different wrestling styles. Then, matter of fact, the ascension of the second wave generation of junior heavyweights with Jushin Liger. Yes. All of that's there. And yes, if you have not seen Jushin Liger, it's like, if you think Rey Mysterio is amazing, I say this with all due respect, but fuck Rey Mysterio. Jushin Liger is that dude. And the thing about it is like, it's this guy, he's about, I'd say Jushin Liger is about 5'6", but the dude is thick than a mofo. I mean, he's just as swole. He was probably getting the same stuff that Benoit was saying. I hate to even bring his name up, but it is what it is.
Yeah.
And the dude can mat wrestle. He can high fly. He can throw strikes. I mean, the dude was in a number of different great matches throughout the 90s. He ran that junior heavyweight division and put on some of the best matches that you have to go out of your way to see.
Definitely.
No lie there. Now, I will say there's two matches that are not on there that I'm very pissed off that I could not find. One being the Andre the Giant versus Stan Hansen match that I told you about last
week. I did watch that. Goddamn.
Yes. Oof. Told you, sir. And the other is a 1999 IWGP title change between Keiji Muto and Genichiro Tenryu. God, man.
Really?
People talk about their 2001 match, but their 1999 match for the IWGP title, I really like him, but I can never find it. I can only see, there's only like a 30-second clip of the end, but that match is great. Another match you should go out of your way to watch is 1998 G1 Climax Tournament, Shinya Hashimoto versus Tenryu. I kid you not, they spend like 10 minutes just chopping the hell out of each other. And it doesn't get boring. Because, you know, Japan, you got to understand, they have that fighting spirit where it's like, okay, I'm going to take your worst shot and I'm going to stand up and I'm going to hit you with mine. They just go back and forth. It's a whole different landscape over there. You have to feel it to appreciate it. But this New Japan Pro Wrestling World, they're clearly taking aim at the WWE. They had a press conference where they said that we're the number one promotion in the world for wrestling. But we're not the number one promotion in the world for business, and we want to be number one. And this is supposed to be their first step to not only getting new income, revenue, I should say, but at the same time, exposing their product into new markets. Do you think that's a good route for them to be taking?
Yes, I do, because why would anyone, from a business standpoint, just concede worldwide distribution to Vince McMahon? You know, Inoki thinks his product is just as good, and he has a right to go out there and exploit that. And if he can do his online platform better than the network of WWE is, he's going to get a lot of people, because a lot of people want to see this stuff outside of YouTube. Myself is one of them. And if they're prepared to go back to 72, that means, you know, names like Johnny Powers, who you don't know, and things like that are going to be...
Hold up. I do know Johnny
Powers. Oh, I'll stand corrected, brother. Stand corrected. You know, a lot of cats who went over there and did some great work. You know, I want to see a lot of the Johnny Ace stuff, you know, which, you know, because when he was he sucked.
Well, Ace is All Japan, though.
All Japan? Shit. Damn, yeah. But still, there's a lot of stuff over there. You know, the Brody, Abdullah, Funk. There's a lot of stuff that I want to see. And it's different. It's something different. And that exposes me, because I know the older stuff, to their newer stuff. And like when I see Hase and Sasaki, I can watch them all day. You know, those two against the Steiner brothers are classic matches. I can watch that combination anytime I want to and never get tired of it. So this is a good move for them. And plus, I'll say it. If they do make inroads here, I'll fly some New Japan King of Wrestling gear. You ain't said nothing there.
Believe me, only problem is they do not make our sizes.
Yeah, I know they don't, man. Damn.
He said, no disrespect, but them Japanese are pretty small, unfortunately.
Yeah, little dudes, which is cool.
Now, I would suggest to you is if you do go about ordering the New Japan World, you just if you only watch one thing in succession, watch the Tokyo Dome show from, I believe, 1990 to 2014. That gives you a great jumping on point to seeing year by year the progression of the different wrestlers, the different styles, and who was hot and who wasn't, and who got over to the masses, especially between 94 to 99, which was their I guess their second peak, and then the last 4 years of shows, Wrestle Kingdom. Yeah, about the last four. So, New Japan, to quote Booker T, they coming for you, nigga.
You know, I'm looking forward to it. And it gives people, you know, an option. Or at least something else, some variety, which is going to be great because they're about the work in the in the ring. You said work rate, and that's what they're about in Japan, as opposed to these 20-minute interviews and all that bullshit backstage. You know, let's just get in there and go, man. Let's do this.
But it's important to note that there's personality. It's entertaining.
Oh, there is. But like, it's not drawn out, though.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, you don't understand the commentators, which to me, I've been watching it since 1996, I want to say. I don't even notice that they're not speaking English, that I don't understand what they're saying, that they're speaking Japanese. As a matter of fact, I feel it adds and enhances this different culture, this different flavor of wrestling that I'm viewing. But if you like wrestling, if you like the in the ring, watching the match, the exchange of codes, who wins, who loses, there's no way you cannot get into New Japan Pro Wrestling. And you should order this.
And it's something you mentioned earlier about the style there, about, you know, these two guys will stand in the ring and just take each other's best shot. That reminds me of the first time I really saw that was in ECW with Mike Awesome and Masato Tanaka. Oh. He would take these hellacious hair shots and stand there. I'm like, wow, Tanaka was a beast.
Oh, he's still wrestling, too.
That guy.
He's still wrestling. It's amazing. When you saw him in ECW, he might have been 22, 23.
He was that young?
Yes, he was young. Wow. He was young. So he's still wrestling. He can still go with the right opponent. You can get a 4-star match out of him. Now, in our break from doing these shows, there was something big that happened over the summer that was actually kind of controversial and mirrors a certain other person's departure. Alberto Del Rio was fired from the WWE.
What?
Yes, he was fired. And I would have said you might want to reach out to him, but unfortunately they already settled that case. You probably could have got him the same deal CM Punk got. Now, the way the story goes is that their social media manager or rep or director, which gives me a bad name, damn you. Apparently they were in catering and he was picking up his food and he ate his food and he left it on the table. Somebody told him, hey, you know, you need to pick that up and throw that away. And the guy jokingly, which I'm trying to understand how this goes on, jokingly said, oh, well, no, I don't have to. That's what we have people like Alberto Del Rio here for.
Oh!
Yes.
Oh! Now, yeah. Hold it. I got to throw a name out there. This was not Joey Styles, was it?
No, it was social media guy.
Okay, so Joey's not the social media guy.
He does the web.
Okay, good.
I forgot who his name was. So,
oh, not cool.
Now, he didn't say it to Del Rio, but people heard him say it, and it got back to Del Rio. And apparently,
well, that's half of an error.
Yeah, and apparently, this wasn't the first time he's made a racially insensitive comment directed towards Del Rio. So Del Rio, you know, I'm sorry, being a man, he confronted him. Like,
handle business, hell yeah.
Like, yo, what's this I heard you said about me? And, you know, I get it. Del Rio's a 6'3", 240, 250 guy confronting you. The guy's probably like 5'9", 190, or maybe a little heavy set, who knows? But he's not an athlete. So there's a moment of intimidation. You might feel bullied, but to me, when you find out something you said that was insensitive, you just should just own up to it and just apologize. But no, he wouldn't apologize. Matter of fact, he got smart with him, and Del Rio lost it and smacked him upside the head and roughed him up.
Oh, well.
Now, you would think everybody's saying, like, hey, you know, Del Rio shouldn't have did it, but we understand.
No, he should have did it. Fuck that.
But unfortunately, the Big Show was involved with something that happened backstage where he got physical with a worker, and that worker is suing him. So the social media manager guy, he was upset about this. He complained to HR, and he was like, you know, I could sue. And that's all they needed to hear. And they were like, damn, you know, we can't have this guy suing. We already got a lawsuit that's going on, so we got to do something about Del Rio. So they decided to fire him.
That's bullshit.
Yeah.
That's bullshit.
It's like their hand was being played, but I think they could have handled it better. But, you know, and to me, it's just the way I would look at it, why aren't you firing both? But I guess if they fired the guy, he probably would just sue. But what's right is right, what's wrong is wrong. And did you have to fire him? You couldn't have suspended him?
Yeah, that was wrong, man. That was wrong.
Now, the way it's being reported is that Hunter, who's now the head of talent relations, called Del Rio and told him that, you know, this, we don't really want to do this, but this is the lay of the land, so we have to do this. You know, if you keep your head clean, don't go to TNA, don't go to any of our competition, we'll bring you back. And Del Rio, he was like, wait a minute. I understand I laid hands on the guy, but I was totally within my rights. That was just some disrespectful shit. So he said, look, if you terminate me, I am not coming back. He said, if you hang up the phone and say I am fired, I am not coming back. Because apparently he really wasn't that happy and was going to just wait out his contract, because he figured out that he can make a ton of money in Mexico because he's this big star in the U.S.
Yeah. Yeah.
So Hunter tried to, you know, try to placate him. Didn't work. He hung up the phone, said he was terminated, and Del Rio was like, fuck it, I'm going to CMLL. And, I'm sorry,
AAA.
And he showed up at Triple Mania in, I want to say, September, or maybe it was August. And he's been a big star. Apparently, he's getting $10,000 a night.
And, damn.
He's making a ton of money. They tried to sue him. They tried to give him sent him his termination. They said that he had a 2-year non-compete. They listed TNA, CML, all of the Mexican organizations, should they choose to promote in America, as well as the UFC and Bellator, because he previously had an MMA background where he did some fights in Japan. And he fought it, and he was able to win. The only thing that he was not able to get was a non-disparagement clause, which Del Rio apparently was like, I don't care.
Wow. So why is management backing some social media butthole? In fact, you know what? Let me go ahead and pull his name out publicly, so I can just go ahead and start shit. What's this guy's name? Because I'm reading a little thing on it. Cody Barbieri.
Cody Barbieri.
Fuck you, Cody Barbieri. How about that? There it is. I mean, because he's a social media flunky. He can be replaced. Okay, he can be replaced. He's not needed. And to side against one of the boys in a situation like this, man, that is the wrong fucking message. That really does. I'm not with that one.
I get it. As a corporate entity, you can't have these wrestlers attacking each other. You can't have these lawsuits. It could be bad management. But the way I look at it is, if it did get public knowledge that Alberto Del Rio got physical and smacked and punched the guy out because he made racial remarks, that is not... I don't see how that is a negative to the company.
No, it's not. He should have been fired on the fucking spot. It never should have got to this point. The guy's got a history of running his mouth like this. The boys don't like him. They should have got him out of there, man. Get him out of here. At the very least, he shouldn't be with where the talent is. He's nothing. He should be in Stanford, in the office. He should not be out on tour with the people.
Yeah, that. And the other thing is just, how do you not give him a suspension? How do you not
get bullshit?
And it kind of does say something. I don't know if it's about the WWE or the corporate world or business in general, that they decide we can't fire this guy who made this racially insensitive comment because we have another lawsuit and we don't want to give any more ammunition to this other lawsuit. That says something right there. You know, the right thing to do would be to fire this guy because this isn't the first time, but you can't because we're worried about him suing him and we have another case out here. Right is right and wrong is wrong. WWE, you fucked up, man.
You're wrong. You're fucking wrong on this one. Vince, Steph, Hunter, you guys are fucking wrong on this one, man.
And CM Punk called it out.
CM Punk is right. That was bullshit. If I was one of the boys, I'd walk out. That's bullshit.
Well, I don't know. I don't know. It would be kind of be hard. I got to see what them checks look like.
Yeah, but still, man, this is wrong.
The principality? Well, that's what happens when you don't have a union.
True. And the thing is, you know, this Cody Barbieri ass face, what if he rolls up on Kofi? Hey, boy, shine my shoes. And takes another ass whooping. Kofi fired? This is bullshit.
So what you said is he's probably looking for someone to whip his ass so he can hit the lawsuit lottery?
That's what it is. And if I was there, he'd earn that $1 million ass. I'm telling you that, man. Fuck that. That shit is wrong, man. And if I was there and Jarrell was my boy, I'd jump in it, too. I would jump right in that shit.
He's like, well, you're going to sue. We're going to make sure you can't even make the phone call to sue.
That's right. That's right. You're going to get hurt. Someone kicked this guy's ass. I can't believe that, man. That is unbelievable.
And the worst part about it is he ended up leaving the company. I want to say within 3 months, he left the company.
That is some... Who, wait, Barbieri?
Yes.
Let's find him.
I don't know about that. We can't do premeditated, Mark. Come on. You can't do
All right. Let's find him and go say hi. That's all we can do. Fuck.
All right, so moving on.
Unbelievable.
We had some more. We had another podcast interview that occurred this week. After this past Monday night's Raw, Vince McMahon decided to go on to Steve Austin's podcast for a very in-depth hour-long interview. And God damn. It's like, I'm just going to talk on the surface. On the surface, without even going into anything he said, but just surface. On the surface, dude just seems a little out of touch. And it's fine. He's, 67 years old. He's been in this business since the 70s. He really doesn't have anything else to prove. But, dude, it's all right to admit you do not have your finger on the pulse. You don't. This is very clear. But the first thing we want to get off, I want to state is, he apologized to CM Punk. He apologized to CM Punk for him receiving his termination papers on his wedding. He claims that was an error, that was a clerical error, and that legal doesn't know what talent relations is doing, and, you know, they made the order, they made the call to do it, but they didn't expect him to get it on his wedding day. Are you calling that bullshit like I am?
Yes.
Like, seriously. Okay, his wife works at the WWE. She asked for the time off. Okay, I'm going to give you the benefit of the doubt that you did not know the date, but you knew around the time when they might be getting married. And even further, CM Punk says, hey, Triple H, he called me 2 days before my wedding. I told him I was about to go on a honeymoon. We could talk when I get back. So you knew what was going on. But, you know, hey, Vince, he said he apologized. He also said that he felt that CM Punk wasn't very good at communication. He doesn't have the best communication skills. And that maybe, and Steve Austin, he said, you know, when Austin and McMahon had their falling out and he walked away, there was someone like Jim Ross there to facilitate of bringing them together. And that, do you have somebody there now? Now, I'm not sure if you know this, but who do you think has Jim Ross's job right now?
I don't know. Who? Triple H?
Triple H.
Shit.
So that's kind of a knock from Austin on Triple H. That, you know, like, you don't have somebody that can facilitate management talking to the boys. And he pretty much was campaigning for JR to get his job back. Now, on the surface, do you think that's a wise idea?
I don't think he wants it. You don't think he wants his job back. I think Ross is happy doing what he's doing. But, you know, Stone Cold said what was on his mind. And if Triple H is more concerned with being corporate guy than being a conduit between the boys and management, then that's a valid point.
I don't believe that Triple H is. I really don't. From when he was tapped to take over as Vince McMahon of the WWE, he went about gutting talent relations. He got rid of John Laurinaitis, who was an absolute failure
as a replacement
for Jim Ross. How much of a failure he was, that nobody on the roster was recruited by John Laurinaitis. That says something right there. These were all Jim Ross's boys or people that that were acquired under Triple H. So that tells you how bad John Laurinaitis was at his job. One of the other things that he mentioned, and which got a lot of heat inside and out of the locker room, was his mentions of Cesaro. He says that Cesaro hasn't connected with the audience, that he lacks charisma. He don't know if it's his wrestling style or that he might be Swiss, but he just doesn't think he has it.
You know, I can agree with that to an extent.
Are you what?
Wait, whoa. Hear me out. You know, because I read some of the transcript of that, and he was saying how the guy, or it's been said in the article, the guy's had three managers in his tenure at the WWE, and Heyman just inadvertently outshone him because he's Heyman and he's one of the best in, you know, best ever. And, you know, I don't know what it is about him, but he is just not connecting. It's almost like a Dolph Ziggler a little bit. They've got all the talent in the world, but they're just missing that one thing.
Okay, I'm going to have to disagree with you. I'm sorry. Because I was there, and I'm not trying to gloat or floss. I was there in New Orleans the night of WrestleMania when Cesaro picked up Big Show and threw him over the ring to win the Andre the Giant Memorial Trophy. And the crowd popped huge for him. The crowd were chanting his name. The crowd was doing his little double fist pumping maneuver move. The next night, when he came out, they were chanting his theme music while he was still with the Real Americans, going da 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 da. They were doing that all night. When they left the arena, they were chanting that. And when he announced that he wasn't a Zeb Culture guy, he was a Paul Heyman guy, the crowd absolutely erupted. They wanted this guy to be the next main eventer. So the fact that they still haven't pulled the trigger on him, that is not a Cesaro problem. That's a you problem.
No. I think they didn't give him enough of an opportunity. I agree with that. I mean, they pulled the trigger the other way on him much too quickly. You know, they're in this short attention span mindset. They have to let him get out there and get over on his own, and they haven't let him do that. I mean, he stuck him with Paul, you know, a Paul Heyman guy, and it was more about being a Paul Heyman guy than about standing on his own, and that immediately overshadowed him. Had they not done that and let him, you know, go on his own and let him cut his own promos and learn how to do it, who knows? But they never gave him a shot to do it.
Well, looking back on it, the Paul Heyman guy had nothing to do with Cesaro. I'm thinking it had everything with keeping Paul Heyman on television bragging about Brock Lesnar. That's the way I see it.
That worked too.
And the other thing is looking back on it now, considering how things went, maybe instead of breaking Cesaro away from Zeb Coulter and Jack Swagger, they should have kept him with them, because I honestly liked that unit. I thought it worked. I thought Swagger and Cesaro were really getting good as a team. And as they showed with the Swagger versus Rusev match, Swagger could get over. So I think they should have just went babyface with them. That might have been a smarter thing to do.
I think you're right. They should have kept him face and let him go out there and work.
And the fans were there. The fans were there for him. The other thing was that he criticized, Austin said that, which if you're in the current locker room, you might want to be mad, but hey, at least it's Steve Austin telling you this. He said that he doesn't feel that this locker room is scared. They don't want to piss anybody off, and that nobody wants to go for the brass ring. And McMahon concurred with him. Although he did point out Dean Ambrose, Seth Rollins, Roman Reigns, and Bray Wyatt as guys he think have the potential. Do you think, I'm just saying, as management, and this full disclosure, Big Sexy has his own law firm. As management, would you ever say, yeah, I don't think these people in the office, you know, I don't think they have it. They don't want to go for that brass ring.
I would never say that, because I would never hire anyone who doesn't have that, ever. We talked about this Friday night. I was out with another attorney friend of mine, and we're talking about people in his office. And, you know, you can tell, because he said, you know, Mark, you're a killer. And people in the office, some people are and some people aren't. I mean, we need them, but they're not going to get you to the next level. And they serve a purpose, but they're not killers. You can't hit your you know, wagon to those stars, man. They're just not gonna take you there. And I can see that. Now, in the locker room, if guys are too concerned about their spot instead of moving forward, then they're in the wrong business. Because if I was in that locker room, if I'm in the first match, if I'm in the last match, my attitude is the same. I'm taking the fuck over. If you think you can follow me, come on out there and do it. But I'm going to, you know, bust my butt and let people know that I'm here to stay, and they're going to be talking about my match during the night. You know, win, lose, or draw. They're going to be talking about the match I put on. And And I think a lot of that has to do with the current style in the WWE. There's just too many high spots and all this acrobatic, no selling stuff. And no, they need to learn how to work. And Jim Ross has said this, and I agree with him. These guys don't know how to work a lock, an arm lock anymore. They just don't. You know, it's got to be triple hurricanranas and quadruple this and that. No, no. Learn to work first.
You know who I blame for that? Begrudgingly, ECW. I blame ECW. You had a very, very smart crowd that was looking to get themselves over. And I think, unfortunately, the wrestlers in that environment, they played too much to that crowd because they didn't want to get the you fucked up chance or the boring or boo chance. They wanted to get those pop chance or holy shit chance. And I think that there was a generation of these new wrestlers that came up that saw that, that felt that's the way to work a match.
I can see that to an extent, but you know, they did have some technical people in there as well, but I see where you're coming from.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I think that's the crux of it. That crowd and the wrestlers that reacted to that crowd has unfortunately inspired a new generation of wrestlers that go out there and dance as opposed to put on exhibition competitive matches. That's how I see it.
Yeah, yeah.
One of the other things that he said that I just was like, I looked at him, was like, I can't believe he just said this shit. He said they were discussing Brock Lesnar and him being on television every week as the champion, if that was best for business. And he said he feels that the characters, the wrestlers themselves, and the stories draw fans, not the title.
Wrong.
Which to me is like, that's a very self-fulfilling prophecy. Because I really can't believe he would say that or admit that on television. It's like, you as much as you try to run away from the stigma of wrestling, that's what you are. You're not a soap opera. You're not a drama. You're not a sitcom. You are a exhibition sport. And to say that your title doesn't draw, well, then what are we supposed to be? I was going to say, what are we supposed to be watching before? But I guess we're supposed to find out what happens to the authority. Who does the authority put the title on? And I would love to know what will the man behind the curtain do to the people in the ring outdrawn who will win the world title? Because last time I checked, your biggest drawing match ever was Rock versus Cena. Who will win?
True. And now with the whole idea of Lesnar's contract being up, they got to get the strap off of him. So who's going to be the guy to step forward and take it? Cena? Nobody wants to see that.
Unfortunately, I think it's going to be Roman Reigns. I'm praying that it's not. I'm praying that he comes back and the fans are just like, yeah, we really didn't miss you that much. Who it should be is Dean Ambrose. I know you don't agree with that, but it should be Dean Ambrose.
Short-term pop, you know, see what he can do. He's nuts. Yeah, I'm okay with that.
Yeah, so looking through, he really gave some very political answers, and he was talking about his life and times in wrestling and his father not wanting him to be a pro wrestler, which, you know, if I look back on it, the difference between Vince and some of the other promoters around the world is that Vince never was a wrestler. Matter of fact, Vince was the son of Vince Sr. He was the son of a promoter. Where you have Vern, who was a wrestler. You have Bill Watts, who was a wrestler. Fritz Von Erich down in Dallas was a wrestler. Sam Mushnick, okay, he was a promoter, but I think he was a failed wrestler. But
Bob Geigel was a wrestler. Roy Sharp was a wrestler. Jerry Lawler, Eddie Graham, yeah.
I think the Crockett was another one. And it's kind of funny when you think about it. The ones that lasted the longest were the Crockett's, or at least, yeah, the Crockett's and the McMahon's, which both were headed by people who weren't wrestlers previously. And to me, it's like, if I'm the father and we're making millions of dollars as the promoters, no, you don't go become a wrestler because there's more money being a promoter and there's less wear and tear on your body. You can have a better quality of life. And I don't understand why are they so insistent of, I want to be a wrestler. It's like, no, make your money. And eventually you got to be in front of the crowd.
True. And it sounds like Vince is being, and this is a little deja vu here, sounds like Vince is turning into Vern Gagne here and not seeing what's in front of him. You know, because back in the 80s, Vern had the Freebirds and the Road Warriors. And he's like, you need to, and Michael Hayes said this on the DVD. He said, look, you need to put us in there with the Road Warriors. No, no, we're both two heel teams. No, the Road Warriors are not a heel team. Are you not paying attention? And he didn't want to work with Hogan. He let him walk. And, dude, you got to see how the times are changing. And Vince, if Vince could, he'd go back to the, you know, the late, mid to late 80s with the whole wrestling pops and the federettes and all that bullshit. Vince, nobody wants to see that anymore, man. You know, it's not about the one body type. You know, Vince is a little behind the times. I agree. He's a lot of touch.
Good Lord. Well, that was the Vince McMahon podcast, and already scheduled, but just very coincidence, the very next night, CM Punk was back on Colt Cabana's Art of Wrestling podcast with part two of his expose. This time he took listener questions, and he the previous week he said, send your questions and I'll answer your questions. That way I can just be done with this whole wrestling thing, which actually now makes sense because he moved on to UFC. And he ended up saying a number of things on the show that were a little bit eye-opening. One, he pretty much said, fuck you, Vince McMahon, and fuck your apology.
Yeah, he did say that.
He said, I don't believe it. He's like, look, dude, you have my phone number. You have my address. You could have called me. You could have texted me. You came to Chicago twice since then. You could have went to my house. I'm a 10-minute drive from the airport. So he said, no. I don't believe your apology, and that was bullshit. It was done deliberately and maliciously.
You know, one thing about the whole Vince McMahon thing and Punk, how he's been mistreated, he was contracted to do an appearance for Wizard World for 20 large, and they took him off that to make a show in Mexico. That was bullshit. That was some bullshit.
But the thing I don't get is, why would you do that? I'm just, I don't understand. The dude can make money in wrestling and out of wrestling for you. Why would you do that? That just makes no sense whatsoever.
None. Well, yeah, it does. Because Vince wants to push who he wants to push. And now, you know, Punk has a different appearance, you know, all the tats and whatnot and all the piercings. And, you know, yeah, for Vince... Yeah. For Vince, what he wants them all to be John Cena. And that ain't going to happen. You know, so he's going to push him. And he gave that spot to Daniel Bryan, who isn't exactly clean cut himself, but, you know, that went to him instead of Punk.
Yeah. And then some of the other things, I'm looking this over real quick. Yeah, I think that was the only thing that he really brought up was the Wizard World thing and how they one of the things that they did was they ended up pushing Cena to go to Wizard World, which rubbed him the wrong way, which, yeah, I can agree with that. The other thing was apparently he saw that somebody in the office sent him a letter stating that 2K wanted to put him on the cover of one of the years, the year that he was the WWE 2K cover guy. 2K pushed for that, and WWE was like, no, we don't want that. How about Rey Mysterio or Sheamus? They really wanted to push for Sheamus to be the cover guy, and 2K was like, no, we want Punk. And that rubbed him the wrong way, and again, it's like, what are you doing? I guess I can understand to the point that they felt that Punk would never find out about it, but at the same time, it's like, why are you going out of your way to deny one of your top stars being depicted as one of your top stars?
Exactly, man. That's just bad business. I don't know who's behind that. I don't know if it's Vince or Steph or Hunter, but that's just bad business.
I think it was probably Hunter. Well, no, I could actually put that on Vince. Vince has a certain... I think Vince is very just set in his ways of what a top star looks like. So, yeah, I can believe that was Vince. To that extent, or at least maybe Kevin Dunn. See, that is the thing that we keep forgetting, that there is, outside of those three there, that there is this Kevin Dunn who goes out of his way to keep fooling people that he's a television producer. No, you're wrestling. Sorry, you're wrestling. It is what it is. Another funny story that he mentioned was he had a friend that was getting married in December, which happened to be the same day as their TLC pay-per-view. He kept telling them that, hey, I'm taking this one off. I'm going to my friend's wedding. Each month, he kept telling them and telling them and telling them. November comes around, they're like, okay, we got you booked in a 3-on-1 match with The Shield at the pay-per-view. Which I think, did they need him in that pay-per-view?
No!
I believe, here's to put it further, that they did not need him in that pay-per-view. That was the month they decided to unify both belts, Randy Orton versus John Cena, in a TLC match. The marketing was, this is the biggest match ever. They're going to unify the titles, all of that. So it's like, why are you pushing to have Punk work that show if your main event is a unification match? I totally believe that was petty. So when he ended up, he went ahead and discussed that how he forced them to put him on first, as well as put AJ on next, so that way they can fly to California. He didn't make the wedding. He was there for the end, and he was there for the reception, and then he flew to the next show. Now, as petty as that was, the question I have to ask Punk is, why'd you do the match?
Well, contracts is contracts. You know, he's advertised to be there, and they put him in that no-win situation, because if he doesn't show up, they're going to come out on the mic and bury him.
They're going
to bury him.
I'm just not going to go with that. If he said a month out before the pay-per-view that they told him that we're going to do this 3-on-1, you versus The Shield, that why did you let them go through with that match? Why didn't you say, I'm taking that day off? It's not happening. That's why I just have to call bullshit on some of the stuff that he's saying. You want to say that they keep doing bad things to you? I'm saying, no, you keep letting them do it. You told them.
That's true. That's true. You let them.
You gave them 6 months' notice. You kept telling them month after month, I'm not working that pay-per-view. I'm taking that day off. So a month out, after not paying attention to what you're saying or just being defiant that you're going to work it, you still do the show. Don't get on a podcast talking shit about them. Be mad at yourself for doing the show. Am I off base with that?
Not entirely. You know, he should be mad at himself for doing the show, but at the same time, he felt that he was in a no-win situation.
Well, and then he devolved into a story about the night that he did do the match, where it's him 3-on-1 versus The Shield, Rollins, Reigns, and Ambrose, and they're like, okay, you're going over, but you got to make Rollins look good because Reigns look good because Reigns is the next chosen one. And he says, well, if you really want Reigns to look good, why don't you just have them beat me? Beat me clean. And it's like, no, because we want you to win. But you got to make Reigns look good.
Shit.
How does that happen? How is that a good idea? Thoughts?
Nah, shit, I can't even wrap my head around that.
Well, that's what they ended up doing. Another thing was he ended up taking a shot at Chris Jericho because
that's what I want to get into. Whoa!
One of the things he mentioned was he was talking about the people were chanting CM Punk. Colt Cabana asked him that, hey, how do you feel about people chanting CM Punk throughout the show, especially at your wife? He was saying, you know what? He's like, I don't think you should do that. You should cheer for the people there. I don't mind if you cheer. It's like, especially at AJ, you know, stop chanting my name when AJ's out there. Why don't you chant her name? It's like, unless, you know, you can chant my name at the people who deserve to have it chanted at them, like Triple H, Vince, Ryback, or people who have lifts in their boots.
Oh!
In case you're unaware, in the history of the, well, I'm going to say the history, but in the recent history of the WWE, there are two people that have been known for putting lifts in their boots. One, Kane.
I did not know that.
Yes, Kane has been known to put lifts in his boots because he's actually shorter than The Undertaker, and they wanted him to be as tall, if not taller, than The Undertaker during their matches. And the other person being Chris Jericho. If you go back to the 2001 SummerSlam, Chris Jericho had a hell of a bad match against Rob Van Dam, and everybody blamed it on the lifts in his boots. All the respect, Chris Jericho, he's a great promo, very good wrestler, charismatic and everything, but the dude is short. He's about 5'9 at best.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe 5'10 on a good day.
He ain't no 5'9. He ain't no 5'10.
So in the land of the Giants, you gotta take every advantage you want. And he threw a shot at CM Punk. Now, if you didn't have a chance to listen to the first podcast with CM Punk last week, he made a point of stating that people will be calling to ask how he's doing or to try to get them on their podcast. And he specifically mentioned Chris Jericho. And I don't know if they had heat. Maybe CM Punk felt that, you know, you're not a friend. We really weren't that close. And now you're talking to me now that I've left because you have this podcast and you want to put some news on your podcast to get more downloads, to get more money in your pocket. But apparently Chris Jericho, he made the statement on his podcast that, you know, hey, CM Punk, he's not returning my phone call. I don't know why he mentioned that. I'd have to go look and find the podcast to see what the context was. But CM Punk didn't take kindly to that, and he's been throwing shots at him ever since. And I laughed mightily when he made that statement because I knew exactly who he was talking about.
Wow, I did not know that until I read it this morning.
Yeah, he...
I did not know that.
But see, the thing I don't get is why would he... I mean, see, this is why I call him a dick. But... I can see you saying people having ulterior motives with speaking with you, but is it really worth this much to just shit on the guy? The guy hasn't said anything bad about you publicly, and this is, in my opinion, how you're going to lose your fan base when you're taking unnecessary shots at people that really don't deserve it.
And the thing is, you know Jericho's going to blast him on his next podcast. You know that's coming.
Actually, I don't know, because I think, say what you will of all the flaws with Jericho, all the faults with Jericho, he's not a dumb person. He's a very smart person. I think he knows that if he does, he doesn't want to get in a war of words with CM Punk, because he has this, for better or worse, this huge following that will, whatever he says is the gospel truth. And there's money there. You don't want to lose your audience. Although he's probably going to have a huge amount of downloads for his next show because people are going to be waiting for him to respond to what CM Punk said.
Yeah, but I did not know Jericho wore a shoe or lifts in his shoes. That is heavy.
Well, hey, you got to do what you got to do to get that competitive advantage, especially when you're dealing with someone like Vince McMahon. Because Vince is about 6'2", 6'3"-ish.
Yeah, Vince is a good size, yeah.
And some of the stuff that people say is that Vince will look at a guy and think and say, well, I can kick his ass. And it's like, okay, I understand you weightlift, but, you know, dude, have you been watching the UFC? The bigger man doesn't always win. The more skilled man wins. Unless Brock Lesnar, because Brock Lesnar is a skilled wrestler, so that doesn't count either. The last one that I thought was... In my opinion, and I'm not trying to come off as a Punk hater, but it's just that you have to call it out when you see it. So the last thing he mentioned was people calling him Phil. First of all, that's your name. Your name is Phil Brooks, okay? People may know you as CM Punk, but your name is Phil Brooks. He's saying that he does not like people that don't know him calling him Phil on the streets or in restaurants or in places of business or even at wrestling events. And he wants you not, if you're not my friend, don't call me Phil. It's fine to call me CM Punk.
I'm okay with that. Dude, it's a respect thing, man. You don't know me. Okay, you don't know me from fucking Adam. All you know from about me is what you see on TV. If I met Triple H, I would not walk up and call him, you know, Paul. I don't know him like that. You know, that's not cool, man. I have no problem with that.
See, this is the problem I have with the wrestling business, because people live their gimmick almost 24/7. That it's like, okay, wait a minute. Well, on one hand, you want to say you're an actor, it's just a character, it's a gimmick. But then when you're not in quote unquote character or gimmick, you say, oh, you can't call me by my real name, you call me by my gimmick name. That's a contradiction there, don't you think?
No. No, okay. Again.
Please explain.
If you're in that type of environment where you are told, and this business has always been this way, you know, I don't want to go as far as saying live your gimmick, but that's your name. That's what these people call you. Because back in 88, you know, I did a few indie shows. I admit that. And some of the guys...
You're ashamed of, sir.
I know. But the guys I worked with to this day still call me by my ring name.
What was your ring name?
Sugar Bear.
Sugar Bear.
Fuck you. It was a while ago. People to this day... I was recently up in Oregon. You know, at one of my buddies' wedding, I was, you know, doing the wedding for his daughter. Everybody there called me Bear all weekend. No one called me by my name. Because, again, it's a sign of respect. And, you know, obviously I'm not CM Punk or Triple H or Undertaker or whoever. I've been backstage at WWE or WWF shows. I met Shawn Michaels. I didn't call him Michael. It's not my place to do that. You know, that's not cool. You know, it's like you meet an older person, like you meet the president. Do you call him Barack? No. You call him Mr. Fucking President. If he says call me whatever, then you call him that. It's just respect, man.
Okay, I could semi understand, but you have to be able to see the other side of that, where it's like, you know, you're giving mixed messages. You're saying that we're an actor, this is a character, but if you don't know me, only call me by my character.
When is he, other than the Talking Dead, when has he ever been identified in the media as Phil Brooks?
That's true.
There you go. So it's not like he goes on TV and says, well, I'm Phil Brooks and I play CM Punk. No, I'm CM fucking Punk. The Marvel comic he's doing, CM Punk.
But that makes sense because you don't recognize CM Punk. But yeah.
You know, I met Raven. I didn't call him Scott. I named fucking Raven. You know, same thing with Bam Bam Bigelow. He never said that. You know, I'm like, hey, Bam Bam, how you doing? You know, you don't call these people by their name because you do not know them like that. Mm. That implies a sense of camaraderie and things like that. And that business, which is so, not anymore, but has a tradition of being so guarded. If you're back there, you know, and they let you in their world, you got to, you know, earn that. And for knuckleheads on the street, hey, Phil, how you doing? Oh, hell no. Hell no. No, I see his problem with that, and I agree with it.
Now, one time I did run into the artist formerly known as Sting at the airport on my way to WrestleMania in Orlando. And I'm sitting there, I'm like, I know that's Sting. Okay, do I call him Sting or Steve Borden? Sting or Steve?
You call him Sting.
So I just walked over to him. I was like, I'm sorry, you're Sting, right? He's like, yeah. He's like, yeah, yes, I am. It's like, you know, I don't want to take up much of your time and your family. I know you're trying to get to where you're going. I just wanted to shake your hand and tell you I enjoyed you in WCW. You were freaking awesome. You were the best wrestler. And actually, I'm kind of glad you've never gone to the WWE. Keep doing your thing. You got a fan for life here. You know, just said that. You get the skirted whole around that whole naming thing.
And so you didn't walk up and say, hey, you played Sting. No. You said you're Sting. Yep. Cool. There it is.
That was kind of dope. He actually asked me, so do you think this is going to be Flair's last match? Ha! And I actually said, like, shoot, I think you know better than I would. He's like, I hear it is, but you never know. Plans change. So, yeah, that was a CM Punk. He gave us some more sign bites. He said he's done. He loves his wife. He calls his wife Ape, in case you cared.
I did not know that.
Ape.
April. See, again, April Jeanette. If somebody rolls up on her, calls her April, we got a problem. You don't know her like that, man.
I want to call her baby, if you ask me.
Well, that's a whole nother podcast. You know, you do what you need to do, man, but, you know.
So, the question I have to ask you, how much longer do you think she'll be in the WWE?
I think she'll be there as long as she's enjoying it. You know, and clearly she does. Now, and it's cool that she's decided to stay there, even with all the beef that her husband and Vince have. But, you know, she's still pretty much the top diva there, you know, title or no title. So I don't see her leaving.
Well, I'm not sure if we had the discussion last week, but one of the things that I had was this plays into CM Punk as well. They sent a termination letter to her soon-to-be husband on their wedding day. Now, she's still gainfully employed. CM Punk has all the money in the world, all the money in his world that he needs to live comfortably for the rest of his life. So it's like, it's either here or there. But the issue that Punk has and what everybody does see is like, look, this is his wedding day. And you guys couldn't put petty differences aside to just give me that day. And my contention is like, how does AJ go back to the WWE after that? And as her husband, I guess he must have been like, no, you go do what you got to do. But I'm like, as her husband, how do you not say, yeah, babe, don't go back?
Because, one, you don't tell her to do anything. Baby, what do you want to do? You know, I want to go back. All right, cool. You support your wife, man. If that's what she wants to do, let her do it. If she doesn't want to go, then don't make her go.
But why would she want to go back? That goes back to my question. Why would you want to go back after you saw what they just did to your husband? And technically to you on your wedding day.
She hasn't been in this business that long, and it's still fun to her. It wasn't fun to him.
And I bring that up is because he said people are accusing him and saying, well, you'll be back. If they give you the main event of WrestleMania, you'll be back. If WrestleMania is ever in Chicago and they want to offer you the Hall of Fame plus the main event of WrestleMania, you'll be back. And he's like, no, I would consider it a failure if I go back. He's like, there might have been something, but sending me my termination letter on my wedding day closed the door that I would never want to go back. And I'm like, you know, that's a good ass point. I've been saying, oh, he'll be back. But you know what? Yeah, that is, you know, I can't imagine getting, quote unquote, fired on my wedding day and wanting to go back and put money in those people's pockets. Because ultimately, even though he can make $3 million, how much money do you think they're going to make off of him?
Oh, they're going to get paid. They're going to get theirs.
Now, and one last thing, and I'm not sure what your field of in law is, but here's one thing. I keep having this argument. How does CM Punk get to claim he was fired when he walked out? Now, the thing that the story that he tried to tell, which to me, I was saying, okay, dude, this is bullshit. He tried to say that, again, this was back at Vince McMahon. He tried to say that, look, I left. He went. They say it had been 2 months because this was in reference to them not for their bullshit apology. He was like, "Yo, I've been gone for 2 months. You suspended me. You don't know. I could have changed my mind, but nobody bothered to call me." And I'm like, "Wait a minute. So now you're saying that you would have been open to coming back, yet you did not pick up the phone and call them and tell them that? But for all intents and purposes." Like what I just said, all intents and purposes.
Thank you.
You walked out. You told your bosses you did not want to be there anymore, and you walked out. They followed up with you a week later, says you wanted to come back. You said no. How is that not quitting? And how are you being mad that you were quote unquote fired? Which that firing was really their way of trying to get out of paying you money owed.
You know, pride is a hell of a thing. You know, that's all I can say, because he felt disrespected by them, and rightfully so, behind this money that he was owed. And the fact that they did release him and, you know, terminate him and whatnot, and they're trying to claim that he breached back in January, that doesn't fly. You know, so the fact that he walked out doesn't mean, I mean, did he miss any dates when he walked out? Did he miss any advertised dates when he walked out?
Well, I think he might have missed the Raw. I think he might have been advertised for the Raw that he walked out right before the show. So there's that one. I don't know if they had advertised him for the next month going up to the next pay-per-view. So that's not sure. But he definitely missed that Raw that I'm sure he was advertised for.
Yeah, and he could claim that he was recovering from that back thing on his back, too. Okay. I know. Technically, yes.
Anyway, so yeah, I'm sorry, CM Punk, since I'm not your friend. I'm sorry, CM Punk, you quit, and they tried to get out of paying your money. It wasn't a term, they didn't fire you. They tried to break the contract so they didn't have to pay you money. That's what I'm sticking with, sir.
Well, also, you know, going back to Punk, he, and this is, you know, goes back to Del Rio as well, you know, he nailed them on the enforcement of this non-competition clause in their contract. And Punk made a very strong point and won because if they're considered independent contractors, they're not under, under any contract. So you can't impose that type of restriction on them. Also, let's face it, they have no competition now. You know, back in the day, in the 80s, 70s, yeah, you could go to AWA, you could go to a territory, you could go to NWA. Where are you going to go now? Nowhere. TNA, they barely are on life support. And their show's terrible. Have you watched them lately? I don't. Does anybody?
I haven't watched them.
See? You know, so that
I just keep up with enough to know what's going on, but I haven't. I don't particularly watch the show. I used to love The Beautiful People and Gail Kim, but
oh, Angelina Love, yes.
Velvet Sky, Velvet Sky.
I'm okay with that too. In fact, we should get Angelina on the show. Wow.
Have no problems making the call.
All right, Angelina. Yeah, but back to business. When they try to limit a performer from where he can ply his trade for a specified amount of time, and he's not a contracted employee, instead he is an independent contractor, that would never hold up in court. And I'm surprised no one tested them on it before now.
They don't have the money. Either they don't have the money or they don't have the right lawyer. Because WWE's practices is they'll, like, look, we have hundreds of millions of dollars. So we'll just keep stalling and stalling and stalling, and you have to pay the attorney.
Yeah, I got to get paid. Yeah. That's true.
So if they're going to wait nearly 2.5 years to get to court, how much money is that in attorney fees on a wrestler?
But the thing is, I get that back. I mean, the talent gets that back, and Vince ends up paying my attorney fees anyway.
But, again, well, that's a good point. But, okay, you're an attorney. Let's say Del Rio came up to you, and he's going to fight this non-compete clause. I mean, you're good, and you probably can put all the loopholes there. But what if, unlike CM Punk, Del Rio doesn't have the goods on them that made them crumble and said, we'll just give them everything we can to get them to go away. And they keep stalling and stalling for nearly 2.5 years. How long are you, if you know that it could possibly be a year or 1.5 years before you get in front of a judge, how long are you going to stay his attorney?
I'd stick it out, man, because in my mind, I'm ethically bound to see this thing all the way. Have to. And plus, and this is because, you know, maybe I'm, you know, still relatively new in this field, if I can take a piece out of a large company like that, I'm going to do it.
Unfortunately, I think, I'm not sure how it's been ending, but nobody has been able to stick it through to really challenge that independent contractor.
Because no one has stepped forward to do it.
Well, people actually, if step you have, forward. Raven had he tried to sue them, and it got thrown, I believe it got thrown out of court.
I'd have to see what he tried to sue them under. Well, you know, because I don't know if they tried to limit, you know, prohibit him from applying his trade based on that clause. I'd have to take a look at that.
Well, that could be a subject for our next show. I'll get all that information to you, and maybe you can school these wrestlers on how they can get paid from Vince and them.
Shit, you ain't saying nothing.
Well, maybe not school them, because you don't want to tell them how to do it.
I'll just lay out the options for them.
But yeah, that's been their MO, is that they'll just keep delaying, and eventually those attorney fees gets to the wrestlers, and they just end up dropping their case because they can't afford to keep paying them. I mean, maybe they haven't gone up to the right lawyer that's like, look, I know we have a winnable case, so don't worry about the money. We're going to get it all back in this one. That's the only thing I can think of.
And the thing is, you got to, you know, as an attorney, you got to tell your client, so look, man, I'm in this. You know, I'll get mine on the back end because we're going to win. You can't guarantee you're going to win, but, you know, if the facts are strong, you know, you're going to win, or they're going to settle, because if the facts are strong and the bigger company won't back down, they don't want to risk the black eye publicly. They will settle and ask for a confidentiality agreement. Trust me.
Yeah, and the main thing, I guess this is why Punk got his, is that they don't want to set a precedent with their remaining wrestlers.
Exactly. Because they don't want to do that, because once one actually goes through the judicial process and they lose, all hell's going to break loose. But it's also in their favor because, again, where are they going to go? You know, the boys are in a position now, not, you know, back to what Austin said, don't piss anybody off. Because you don't have anywhere to go now, which is really bad.
Yeah, and so if they had any smarts about them, they should be trying to get New Japan making some inroads in the U.S. or, but, you know, Vince just has it. And it tells you how much Vince has a lock on it, the fact that they do not book MSG as often as they used to.
They don't do it once a month there anymore?
Nope. They won't book pay-per-views. They'll go to the Barclays Center because MSG is apparently really expensive. Like, the break-even on their shows is really high. And they just will just go to the Barclays.
Wow.
Yeah, that tells you something. Can you imagine not doing MSG like that? And it's actually open for other wrestling organizations to book?
New Japan should do a show right there.
I don't know about that one.
I mean, what say
it's a bold step, but
take the step. That was in the message. TNA couldn't do it because they can't afford it. Fuck them. New Japan can do this. They've got the resources. They've got the talent. They've got the name. They can make that happen. And you think about that. You got, you know, their top people in that ring, in that building. That's a big fuck you to Vince.
Yeah, it is. That is a hell of a bold statement they're making.
And it's not like Vince hasn't done shows in Japan.
That is true. No, he's never done the Tokyo Dome. He's done a collaboration with them at the Tokyo Dome, but he's never done the Tokyo Dome by himself.
All right.
He ain't got that.
What's his name? I just went dry.
Inoki?
Thank you. Inoki and his people need to just come in and just say, look, we're here now and we're doing business. Get us in the building and let's do this. And it would sell out. I know it would sell out.
I'm not as confident. They need to get some publicity for their product first.
They'd get some publicity for the product and the right mixture of American talent who was in there to work. Shit. It will sell out.
All right, Big Six. This has been great chopping it up with wrestling. Like we like to do at this time, we like to do our I Saw It First, where we highlight one of our old school matches of the week. Do you want to go first, sir, or should I?
Yes, I'll go first. Again, I'm older than you are, so I'm going to go back to 1981. Kansas City, the Bob Geigel Central States Territory. Somehow on my cable system in Oakland, they were showing... Central States was running in San Francisco after Roy Shires closed his promotion down. Why was Central States running San Francisco? I don't know, but they were there. And one day, Dusty Rhodes is on TV, and I am unabashedly a Dusty Rhodes mark. I'm in his biography, and I'm on page 224 to 226. That's me. I wrote that. But Dusty's in the ring after just having beaten Tank Patton in an old TV match, and he's talking, and there's this black woman in front of the gorilla position, but in front of the hard camera, just will not sit still. And Dusty sees this, and he's all, come here, baby. Give me some of that brown sugar. And she jumps in the ring, kisses him, and the place erupted. Now, I don't know if that was planted or not, but I thought that was the coolest thing that I had ever seen in my life.
That does sound dope. So, of course, only the Stardust can do something like that.
Oh, only the Dream, if you will, can pull that off, baby.
Well, I'm going to go back to 1992. Since we were talking about Sting, I'm going to go to arguably one of his greatest matches. Yeah, I go ahead and say one of his greatest matches ever against Cactus Jack at Beach Blast 92. It was a falls count anywhere on the beach, the Gulf Coast, I believe. This took place in Biloxi, Mississippi, if I recall, against Cactus Jack, who was just crazy. At the time, Mick Foley, of course, he was just doing this crazy thing where he was attacking Sting and just trying to get a world title match and just beating him up. Mind you, he had Vader lurking in the wings as well. So on his way to the Great American Bash, which was going to be a title defense against Vader, he had a no-holds... falls count anywhere on the beach match with Cactus Jack, and it was freaking awesome. His music hits. He comes out with the WCW world title around his waist, and he stops at the top of the ramp. And mind you, at this time, they had that elevator ramp that went all the way to the ring. Yeah. So he's taking off the jacket. He takes off the belt, and Cactus is like, okay, fine. You think you about to do something? So he comes out onto the ramp, and they just start throwing bombs at each other on the ramp. It was freaking awesome. And it was a good 15 to 20 minute match. There was all through the ring. Cactus Jack did a sunset flip from the top rope to the floor, which I know I bet he wishes he hadn't done that looking back on it now. There was one rest hold where Cactus Jack had him in a body scissor with what looks like the Taz Mission choke on him. They hit each other with chairs. They were doing dives to and from the floor. The finish, I don't want to give it away, but Sting does a dive from the top rope to the apron that you just have to see. I recommend that match. My old school match of the week.
You know, hearing about that match reminds me of Cactus Jack's book, where he talked about being part of, I think it was called Sullivan Slaughterhouse, and that stable with Abdul the Butcher.
And I think it was Buzz Sawyer.
Yeah. At one point, they were doing an angle, and they were doing a promo, and they were all going to have being like a slaughterhouse in a butcher shop cutting up meat. And the powers that be said, well, you can't have blood on your butcher coats. So they all did it in these white butcher coats and looked completely stupid. Man, WCW was just so lost when they bought it from the Crockett's. God, that was such a wrong move.
Well, Crockett was going out of business. He was losing money.
Yeah, but, you know, then Turner bought it and AOL got involved and fucked it all up.
Well, that's going to be for another show. Thank you all for listening. Big Sexy, you got any parting shots? Let us know where we can find you at.
I can be found on Facebook under Mark Wiggins, and I can be on Twitter under Big Sexy NSAC. And NSAC means in Sacramento, because we got into this on another podcast, so people, let's not get twisted, all right?
Well, I'm telling you, you should have gone with what Michael Dean's girl said. Shout out to Michael Dean, Chief Podcast Officer. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram under @poo. Yes, that's my Twitter handle, and I like it. Anybody that has anything negative to say about it, well, go fuck yourself. We are recording this at 7 o'clock on a Sunday night, and I'll have a new column up at 411 Mania Comic 8 Ball around 8:30. That'll be discussing the top 8 comic book castings that never were. Can you take a guess what number 1 is?
Never were?
That never were. We're talking about Angela Bassett as Storm, Wesley Snipes as Blade.
Wasn't Wesley Snipes?
I'm sorry, as Black Panther. Okay. Apologies, as Black Panther.
I'm gonna have something to say on the list, but I'm gonna say now that Angela Bassett should not have been Storm. Iman should have been Storm.
Iman couldn't act.
Your point is what?
Oh Lord, that's why he's Big Sexy, ladies.
She could have pulled it off though. They're not asking her to go up there and do, you know, any King Lear or anything like that. She could have done this. But let me see. Okay, that never were.
Yeah.
Hmm.
And my number 1 was recent. It was recent.
Okay, let me have it.
Okay. Hey, Michael Dean, can you go ahead and edit this out? Bryan Cranston as Lex Luthor.
Get the fuck out. Well, then again, who do they have now on Lex Luthor? They have
Jesse Eisenberg.
Yeah, that's some bullshit.
Yeah, okay, thank you. And I'll have a new column up on KnockoutNation.com, AllHipHop.com, Breaking Kayfabe. Read it. Love it, share it. Trademark infringement for Sean Hill. Shout out to you. Thank you for joining us again, and join us in 2 weeks for a new episode of the Wrestling Rundown. Later, everyone.